2015. Helen. Helen was worried about Patrick. He'd become absent-minded. He would take her car and forget where he'd left it, or sometimes leave junk in it, as he had the other day. Things he'd found? She didn't want to know. She was afraid for him. She was afraid for herself, too. The events of the last year had unsettled her. Last autumn, she had discovered that her husband, her solid, steadfast, moral husband, was not all that she'd thought him to be. What was she to do? Leave? Abandon her home and her responsibilities? Patrick persuaded her to stay. He assured her that Sean deeply regretted his infidelity and that he would work to earn her forgiveness. Meanwhile, he'd said, if you would like to take the spare room here. She still slept in her father-in-law's house most nights. Occasionally, Patrick liked to talk about his life, about the town. Sometimes he told her things which disturbed her. Stories of the river, old rumours, nasty tales long buried and now dug up and revived, spread as truth by Nell Abbott. But her lies won't ever see the light of day. I'll see to that, he told her.
Sean, for several days after my mother died, I didn't speak. I don't remember much about that time. I remember the way Dad shocked me out of my silence. He held my hand over a flame until I cried out. It was cruel, but effective. Afterwards, he let me keep the cigarette lighter. I used to carry it with me, but recently I lost it. Erin phoned to say there'd been a disturbance at Mark Henderson's house. Windows had been broken, and a neighbour had seen a young boy leaving the scene. I saw Josh on the bridge, and I went over to him. Josh, you weren't at Mr. Henderson's house this afternoon, were you? He looked away. Don't tell Mum, Mr. Townsend, please. But Josh, what on earth were you doing? He started to cry. Come on, I'll drive you home. No, Mum will never forgive me. In the end, I took him to the station and made him a cup of tea. He's frightened and he doesn't want to go home, I told Callie. The words triggered a memory. I was 6 years old and a policewoman was holding my hand. I never know which of my memories are real, but in this one I was shivering and afraid. He's frightened and he doesn't want to go home, my father was saying. Can you take him, Jeannie? That was it. Jeannie. WPC Sage. My phone, ringing, brought me back to myself. Sir? It was Erin. Another neighbour saw a teenage girl running off. Lena, of course. I went back to Josh. We need to get in touch with your parents, I said, but then he started sobbing again. Josh, please tell me what's upsetting you so much. It's about Mr. Henderson. Mr. Henderson and Kitty.
Thursday, 20th of August, 2015. Lena, it started as a joke. The thing with Mr. Henderson. A game. Katie and I had played it before with Mr. Fryer and Mr. McIntosh. You just had to get them to blush. With Fryer and McIntosh, it was easy. With Mr. Henderson, though, it was another story. Katie went up to his desk and smiled, leaning forward, but he stood up and walked away. When I tried, standing close to him and touching my hair, he yawned. I couldn't get that out of my head. I didn't want to play anymore. It was months later when Josh came to see me on Valentine's Day with a hilarious story. I messaged Katie, KW and MH forever. I got a text back 5 seconds later saying, delete that now or I will never talk to you again. Chill, I thought. The next morning, Katie met me before school. What made you send that text? I laughed. Josh told me he saw you and Mr. Henderson holding hands in the car park. But Katie didn't laugh. She started to cry. I just couldn't tell anyone. And then it hit me. Are you actually saying there's something going on? She just looked at me. You can't be. That's insane. Katie, you have to stop this before something happens. Lena, it's already happened. It's been happening since November. I didn't tell the police any of that. They came to the house when Julia and I were eating dinner. I thought it was about the broken window. I held my hands up straight away. I'll pay for the damage. Jules started clearing away the dishes. Sean sat down. We'll get to that later. First, we need to talk about Mark Henderson and Katie Whittaker. I went cold. He leant forward. Josh has just told us that Mark Henderson was engaged in a relationship with Katie in the months before she died. Bullshit! Why would he invent a story like that, Lena? I don't know. Lena, Erin said, why would you protect a man who has taken advantage of your friend like that? He didn't take advantage of her. She wasn't a child. Then why do you hate him so much? Were you jealous? I lost it then. I hated him, you stupid bitch, because he took her from me. I couldn't help it. I was just too tired to lie anymore, and it was obvious they would find out anyway, now that Josh had opened his big mouth. So I sat in our kitchen, and I betrayed her. Yes, Katie and Mark Henderson had a relationship. It started in the autumn, it ended in April. It started up again in May, I thought, but not for long. I think, Erin said, you need to go back to the beginning, Lena. No, I don't think she does, Julia said suddenly. Lena's tired. That's enough for today. You're right, Sean stood up. Do you realise what this will do to her parents? I said. Erin turned to me. Well, at least they'll have a reason why. No, they won't. She didn't do it because he broke her heart. She did it to protect him. She thought he would go to prison as a sex offender. Don't you understand? She was getting rid of the evidence.
Sunday, 23rd of August. Patrick. The dream Patrick had of his wife was always the same. She was in the water. He swam out and grabbed hold of her, but as he did, her face turned towards his, and through her broken, bloodied mouth, she laughed. It was always the same, only last night, when the face turned towards him, it was Helen's. Patrick woke with a terrible fright. He got up and went next door to Helen's room. She started when she saw him. Patrick, what's wrong? Did I leave some rubbish in your car the other day? I took some rubbish from the cottage. What did you do with it? I threw it away. She sat up. Dad, do you think it had started up again, him and her? Maybe. But it's over now, isn't it? He went down to the kitchen, his heart heavy. He felt sure Helen had lied to him. And it was Sean's mistake that had led them here. But who was he to criticise his son? As a young man, he'd chosen badly for himself. He chose a beauty, a weak, selfish beauty. He'd chosen badly once, but not a second time, because Helen was his choice. The daughter of a colleague, quiet and plain and hard-working. He'd chosen well for his son. Women brought him low, Lauren first, and then Jeannie. But not Helen. Surely not Helen. He thought again of the dream, history repeating itself, only the women getting worse.
Nicky, Jeannie said it was about time somebody did something about all this. Well, he used to say I should keep my mouth shut for my own protection, Nicky retorted. But I've tried. I've been pointing in the right direction. I left the sister a message. She remembered Jeannie's last visit to the flat. She was shaking with fear. She told Nicky that Patrick Townsend had been to see her. He said that if she kept on asking questions, if she continued to ruin his reputation, then he would see to it that she was hurt. Not by me, girl. I'll get someone else to do the dirty work. Jeannie had made Nicky promise that she'd leave it alone. But what about the boy? I know, but you have to be quiet, Nix. Say nothing. Because Patrick will do for me and he'll do for you too. Jeannie left a couple of days later. She never came back.
Jules, it was mid-afternoon. I must have fallen asleep. I dragged myself across to the bathroom and turned on the shower. I was too exhausted to undress, so I just stood there while the room got steamier. I turned off the water, and then I saw two letters appearing in the condensation on the mirror. L and S. I stood there, staring at them. It was the sort of thing you used to do to scare me. You must have told Lena, and now she was doing it too. But why, L.S., why, Libby Seaton? I went across the hallway into your bedroom. There was a smell in the air, something sweet, cloying. The drawer next to your bed was closed, but when I pulled it open, the lighter, the one on which you'd had Libby's initials engraved, was gone. Someone had taken it. I made my way downstairs. I needed some air. But as I opened the front door, Louise Whittaker was standing there. Is your niece at home? I showed her into the house. Lena was sitting at the kitchen table. She greeted Louise meekly. I'm sorry, Mrs. Whittaker, I'm really sorry. All the time, you said nothing. And worse than that, you let him get away with it.
Lena finished the sentence.
Yes, I did, and it made me sick. But I did it for Katie.
Don't you say her name to me, Louise hissed. She raised her hand to her throat. She was gripping the bluebird between her fingers.
This... it wasn't from you, was it?
Lena hesitated for a moment before shaking her head.
It was from him, wasn't it?
Louise ripped the chain from her neck, slamming it down on the table.
He gave it to her, and you let me hang it around my neck.
Lena sighed. Explain this to me then, Louise said, her voice very low.
If Katie loved that man, and if he loved her back, then why? Why did she do what she did?
Lena looked afraid.
It wasn't him, she sighed. Katie and I argued. I wanted her to stop seeing him. I thought...
She shook her head.
I just didn't want her to see him anymore.
A flash of understanding crossed Louise's face. She understood in that moment, as did I.
You threatened her,
I said.
With exposure.
Yes, Lena said, barely audible.
I did.
Louise left without a word. Lena sat motionless, staring out of the window.
I lied to her, she said.
To Louise? There was no point in telling her the truth, not now. She turned to look at me, and she looked weary.
I didn't threaten to tell anyone. I would never have done that to her. I loved her.
So, if you didn't threaten her... I think I knew the answer before she said it.
It was Mum.
Jules. We did argue, like I said. Lena stared back at the window. I didn't want Katie to see him anymore. She said I was immature. I called her a slut. It was that sort of fight. Stupid. Horrible. When Katie left, I realised that Mum was in her room, right next door. I thought she was out. She overheard the whole thing and she said she was going to speak to Louise. I begged her not to. I told her it would ruin Katie's whole life. I actually begged her. In the end, she promised she wouldn't do anything without giving me time to persuade Katie to stop seeing him. She turned to face me. But then, a couple of days later, I saw Mum at school, talking to Mr. Henderson. I knew I had to say something to Katie. Her voice cracked. She died. 3 days later. Lena sighed. But when we talked about it afterwards, Mum said she never mentioned Katie to Mark Henderson. She said they were talking about me. She swore she hadn't said anything, but she felt so guilty. I could see it. She stopped swimming in the river, and she became obsessed with telling the truth. She kept going on about how irresponsible it was to let things go. She looked at me.
You would know all this, Julia, if you'd only spoken to her.
Lena, I'm sorry. Do you know why I know she killed herself? I shook my head. On the day Mum died, we had a fight. I yelled at her, saying that if she'd been a good parent, she could have helped Katie, and she told me she'd tried. She'd given Katie a lift one day. She said Katie was upset, and Mum told her, "You don't have to go through this by yourself. I can help you. Your parents can help you." Katie went to the pool that night, without meaning to. It was Mum who tipped her over the edge, and Katie tipped Mum over the edge too. A wave of sadness hit me. Was that it now? After all this, you did jump. Lena gave me a sad smile.
I didn't tell the police because I didn't want anyone to blame her. It wasn't her fault. It wasn't hers or mine. It wasn't yours.
I tried to embrace her, but she pushed me away.
Please, I need to be by myself. I'm going for a walk.
Nikki. Nikki sat in her room and dozed in the chair, then woke and thought that maybe she had seen Lena heading for the pool. But it might have been a premonition. Later, though, much later, she was certain that she saw the girl moving like a ghost through the square. A ghost with purpose, fairly whipping along.
Jules, I waited in the kitchen for Lena to come home. I rang her phone, left messages. Finally, defeated by exhaustion, I went to bed. I drifted in and out of dreams until I heard Lena's footsteps on the stairs. I heard her going into her room and turning her music on. I slowly drifted back to sleep. When I woke again, the music was still playing. I stumbled into the hall and shouted for Lena to turn the music down. I yanked her door open. The room was empty. I phoned Lena again. When there was no answer, I tried Sean Townsend, but the call went straight to voicemail.
Monday the 24th of August. Mark. It was after 2 o'clock in the morning when he got home. When he saw that all the windows of his house had been smashed, he knew he'd been betrayed. He stood on the lawn and sobbed. He cursed the day he first set eyes on her. Hadn't Katie been the one who started all this, teasing him? So why should it be him then, left alone to suffer the consequences? He gritted his teeth and opened the back door. She came at him. He batted her away, but she came again. What choice did he have? And now there was blood on the floor and it was nearly light. He had to go.
Jules, it came to me quite suddenly. I knew. Not where Lena was, but who she was. I was sitting in the kitchen, dazed, punch drunk. The police had left. They told me to stay put in case she came home. And you were in my head, admonishing me. Why didn't you go after her like I went after you? When I was 17, I saved my sister from drowning. When you were 17, Nell, you drove me into the water and held me down. But was it you who drove me there, or was it Robbie? Or some combination of the two, some combination. Then it came to me. I went to your study and found the picture of Lena and Katie. And Lena's smile isn't your smile. It's his. It's Robbie Cannon's. Lena is Robbie Cannon's daughter. I thought of that day, the way he'd looked at Lena. He wasn't looking at her to be seduced. She already belonged to him. So maybe he'd come to take what was rightfully his. D.S. Morgan had said he had a car workshop in Gateshead. I found the homepage on the internet. I didn't call the police. I just picked up the car keys and left. The garage was under some railway arches. I parked the car. Can I help you, pet? I turned and there he was. Uglier even than he had looked on the day of the funeral. Is she here? I asked. Is who here? Lena Abbott. Is she here? Nell Abbott's girl? Why do you think Nell's girl would be here? He wasn't faking it. He was too stupid to fake it. He didn't know where Lena was. I turned to go. Hang on. He squinted at me. I saw you at the funeral. Finally, it dawned on him. Julia. His face broke into a smile. Julia, why didn't you say something? Lena ran off. I thought maybe... Well, she isn't here. I don't even know the kid. First time I laid eyes on her was at the funeral. Gave me a bit of a turn, if I'm honest. She's so like Nell. He stepped closer to me. I can't believe you're Julia. You look so different. An ugly smile smeared across his face. I popped your cherry, didn't I, girl? Popped your cherry. I thought I would gag. No, Robbie. You raped me. I what? He hissed. I didn't rape you. I was 13 years old. I told you to stop. I was crying. You cried because it was your first time. You never said no, you lying bitch. He started laughing. I had half the girls in Beckford trailing after me. You honestly think I needed to rape a fat gal like you? He believed it. I could see that he believed every word he said. I walked away, and then I stopped. If Robbie didn't think he'd raped me, how could you have done? I turned around. Did Nell know? His lip curled. You're joking, aren't you? Imagine what she'd have said if I told her I'd banged her little sister just after I'd done banging her. He laughed. I just told you you tried it on with me and then you ran off crying when I knocked you back. And she ran after you. There was a sudden tumbling of images in my head. You didn't know. I ran to the car and drove away. You didn't know he raped me.
When you said, I'm sorry he hurt you, you meant you were sorry I felt rejected. When you said, what did you expect? You meant that of course he would reject me. I was just a child. And when you asked me, wasn't there some part of you that liked it? You were talking about the river. You wanted to know what it felt like to abandon yourself to the water. You didn't know. Back in Beckford, I left the car on the bridge and walked along the river path. It was early afternoon and the air was cooling. Not a perfect day for a swim, but I'd been waiting so long and I wanted to be there with you. I stood on the bank. I started to walk forward. I closed my eyes, gasping as my feet sank into the cool mud. But I didn't stop. I kept going. And when the water closed over my head, I realized through my terror that it did feel good. It did.
Mark. Blood seeped through the bandage on Mark's hand. He had no idea where to run. He'd started driving north towards Edinburgh, but then had changed his mind and turned back. He left the main road and drove towards the coast. He needed to stop. To plan. Everything he'd feared was coming to pass. That Friday evening in June, he hadn't been expecting Katie. He remembered opening the door and then seeing the frightened look on her face. Nell Abbott knows, Katie said quietly. And then it all came tumbling out. The things she'd been hiding from him. Lena had known for months, Katie's brother too. Do you have any idea what you've done? When that bitch tells the police, my life will be over. You know what they do to men like me in prison? Do you think I'll survive that? I won't. He saw the fear and hurt in her face, and he still said, and it will be down to you. When they pulled her body from the pool, Mark blamed himself for days for what he'd said to her in anger. But he knew it wasn't really his fault. How could it be? Who could control who they fell in love with? Mark heard a thump from the boot of the car. He still had no idea what he was going to do with Lena. His first thought had been to dump the car in Edinburgh and then get the ferry to the continent. They'd find her, eventually. He might feel terrible, but she came at him, not the other way around. He'd fallen on the kitchen floor, his bag skidding away from him, and from it fell the bracelet. He'd been carrying it around since he took it from Helen Townsend's office. Lena had stared at it, and then she was upon him again, but this time she had the kitchen scissors. He raised his hands in self-defence, and she sliced one of them open. He heard the thump, thump again. He slammed his foot on the brake. There was a satisfying thud as her body banged into metal, and then all was quiet.
Lena, I was frightened when I woke. It was totally dark, but I realised from the noise that I was in a car. My head was sore, and my mouth too. I should never have gone to his house, not without a clear plan. I just wanted to stand in front of him and make him share a little of the blame. I hated to think of Katie being here. I wanted to leave. And then the door opened and there he was. As the light came on, I just went for him. He fell, I think, and I was on my knees and something skittered across the floor towards me. It was my mother's bracelet. Lena, Mark said, and I looked up and I could see that he was afraid. I got to my feet and he stepped towards me. I grabbed the scissors that were on the kitchen table and went for him. But I must have missed, mustn't I? Because he's driving and I'm stuck in the back here with a bump on my head. I banged my fists on the roof and suddenly, bang! The car stopped moving and I slammed into the edge of the boot. I cried. I cried for the pain and I cried for Katie. But you know what, Kay? I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Mark Henderson doesn't deserve to be hounded or beaten. He deserves worse. I know you loved him, but he didn't just ruin your life. He's ruined mine too. He killed my mother.
Erin. I was in the office with Sean when Callie rushed in. There's another one, sir. In the water, a young woman. I thought Sean was going to heave. Sean ran and I followed. The last thing on earth I wanted was to see them pulling that girl out of the water. It wasn't her, though. It was Jules. She was already sitting on the bank. Her teeth were chattering. Sean put his jacket around her shoulders. She wouldn't say a word to us. She just sat there, trembling, staring at the water. The relief was short-lived. The uniforms who'd gone to welcome Mark Henderson home had found his house empty, and there were signs of a struggle in the kitchen, blood on the floor. Henderson's car was nowhere to be found. "Oh, Christ," Sean said. "Lena."
"Jules, the young policewoman wanted to come into the house, but I said I was okay. I wanted to be alone. I went upstairs and ran a bath. I had no desire to be immersed in water again, but I needed to get warm. I let my body slip down into the tub, my shoulders submerged. A sudden thump made me jerk upwards. "Lena?" There was someone in the house. I got out of the bath and dressed as quickly as I could. I tiptoed downstairs, and there, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a shadow. Someone sitting on the window seat.
Erin. Sean went to meet Callie at Henderson's place. I'd been dispatched to speak to Louise Whittaker about the confrontation she'd had with Lena. When I got to the house, Josh opened the door. "Have you found Lena?" he asked. "Not yet, but don't worry." "Who is it, Josh?" Louise called from upstairs. Her son ignored her. "It's D.S. Morgan, Mrs. Whittaker. Can I come up?" "He's angry with me," Louise said by way of greeting. "He blames me for Lena running off." I followed her along the landing. "He blames me. I blame Nell. I blame Lena. Round and round we go." We stopped outside an empty bedroom. Louise smiled wearily. "You can come in. I'm almost done." She knelt down, placing books into boxes. "Sometimes I think Josh believes I pushed Nell Abbott over that cliff. He certainly holds me responsible for the fact that Lena is motherless, alone. Do you believe she has no idea who her father is?" She nodded. "Nell claimed it was a one-night stand. She once told me that she only ever slept with married men because they were discreet and undemanding. Whenever you saw her, she was alone, or with her daughter." She sighed. "The only man I've ever seen Lena be even vaguely affectionate to is Sean." "Sean Townsend? Are you saying there's something untoward between Sean and Lena?" "God, no," Louise laughed. "Not Lena." "So, Nell, there was something between Sean and Nell Abbott." Louise didn't answer. And then I thought of the first time I saw Sean. Stood by the pool with Nell Abbott at his feet, head bowed as though he was praying over her, his shaky hands. "Listen, if you're saying there was something between Sean and Nell, then..." "I said nothing of the sort." Louise stood up. "I think it's time you left, detective."
"Sean, traffic control have picked up Henderson's car," Callie told me when I arrived at the house. She looked at her notebook. "First on the A68 going north towards Edinburgh, but then later going south towards Eyemouth." "He's panicking. Anyone else in the car?" She shook her head. "But that could just mean the other person isn't upright." I had a scrap of memory. A woman lying slumped in a car seat. A sick woman. Convulsing. Drooling. I pushed it aside. "Isn't there a girlfriend? Tracy McBride. Uniforms are bringing her down to Beckford for a chat, but she claims she hasn't seen Henderson for a good while. She says he dumped her, telling her he'd fallen for another woman." Tracy didn't know who the woman was. "I was devastated," she told me, back at the station. "One minute I'm shopping for wedding dresses, and the next he's telling me he can't go through with it because he's met the love of his life." She smiled sadly. "Something happened to him?" "No. We just need to talk to him. You don't know where he might go, if he needed to get away." She thought about it. "My dad has a place on the coast, just north of Craster. Mark and I went there at weekends quite a bit. It's quite isolated. We used to leave a key under a pot, but then we discovered someone had been using it." "When was the last time that happened?" She shrugged. "April? Yeah, the Easter holidays."
"Lena, he apologised when he let me out of the boot. I'm sorry, Lena, but what would you have had me do? I started laughing, but he told me to shut up. We were at a house by the sea. Just one house, on the cliffs, with a garden and a table outside. There was no one around. He led me over to the table and handed me a tissue to wipe my mouth. There was dried blood on the cloth around his hand. For a long time, we just sat there. 'Why did you keep her bracelet?' I asked eventually. 'Why take it?' He didn't look at me, just stared at the sea. 'I don't know. Insurance, I suppose.' I didn't understand what he was talking about. 'I thought my mum had left me,' I said. 'I thought she chose to die because she felt guilty about Katie.' He said nothing. I believed that. And now it turns out she didn't. You took her from me, just like you took Katie. He smiled at me. Katie wasn't yours, Lena. She was mine. I wanted to scream at him then. She wasn't yours. I stared down at the ground, and there in the dirt, I saw a long nail. She loved me, and I loved her, completely. I let him talk, because all I could do was focus on the nail. I levered it up with my foot, and I grabbed it. I went for him then, but I wasn't quick enough. As I sprang to my feet, Mark lunged at me. "What are you doing?" He took the nail and shoved me down onto the table. I felt the metal spike graze my throat, the weight of him on top of me, just like she must have felt him when they were together. Vomit came up in my throat and I spat it out and said, "She was too good for you."
Jules, the old woman who claims to be a psychic, was sitting on the window seat. A clicking sound, click and hiss. "Oh, there you are. I let myself in. I hope you don't mind." "I do mind," I said loudly. "What are you doing here?" Click and hiss. Click and hiss. The lighter. She had it in her hand. "That's Nell's lighter. Have you been in this house, taking things?" "Oh, calm down, Julia." She pointed at the armchair. "Come and join me." I was so taken aback that I obliged. "Why do you have Nell's lighter?" "Not Nell's." She pointed to the engraving. "There, see? L.S. "Yes, I know. Libby Seaton, but..." Nicky cackled. "You thought L.S. was for Libby." "No, no. This lighter belonged to Lauren Townsend. Lauren used to be Slater, your detective inspector's old girl. Sean's mother. The Lauren in the story is Sean Townsend's mother." "That's right. And it's not just a story, is it? Lauren was the one on whose page you wrote, 'Beckford is a place to get rid of troublesome women.'" Nicky was still talking. "I took the lighter because I needed something of hers, didn't I? So I could speak to her. Here." She handed it to me. "But I can't say for sure why she had it. The lighter's Lauren's, and Patrick had it last. It's about Lauren and Patrick. How is this about them? Well, Nell was writing her stories about them, and the story Nell heard, the one where Lauren runs off into the night and her husband and son chase after her, it wasn't true. Jeannie was there. I told Nell our Jeannie's story, and Nell wrote it down. She handed me a sheaf of papers. Jeannie was a policewoman when Lauren died. Jeannie didn't believe Lauren went in without a push. She knew Lauren's old man smacked her about. You're saying Patrick killed his wife, and Nell wrote it down. She wrote down the things Jeannie told me when she was alive, but not what she told me when she was dead. Well, listen to your sister, because he did for them, after a fashion. Patrick Townsend did for Lauren and for our Jeannie, and if I'm not mistaken, he's done for your Nell." The Drowning Pool by Danielle Abbott. Unpublished. Lauren, again, 1983. It was Jeannie who arrived at the river first. Patrick Townsend had called the station, panicking and incoherent, shouting about his wife and the drowning pool. When Jeannie got there, the boy was under the trees, his head on his knees. "What happened, Sean? Mummy's in the water." And then Jeannie saw Patrick dragging himself onto the bank. "I was too late." Paramedics in uniforms arrived. Sean clung to his father. "Jeannie, could you take him to your place?" Patrick said. "He's frightened and he doesn't want to go home." Back at her flat, Jeannie made cheese on toast and cups of tea. "How did you get to the river, Sean?" she asked. "We all went together in the car." "All of you?" Sean's face crumpled. "The storm woke me and then there were funny noises in the kitchen." "What sort of funny noises?" Like a dog makes when it's sad. Like a whimper." Sean nodded. "But we don't have a dog because I'm not allowed." He sipped his tea. "I didn't want to be by myself, so Dad put me in the car." "And your mum?" He frowned. "Not supposed to talk about that." And he didn't say another word.
"Sean, Crest is about an hour's drive from Beckford, but I never go. When Tracy told me where the house was, I felt guilty. I felt the way I had when I thought about my mother's offer of a birthday treat, the one I'd rejected. If I'd gone to the beach, would things have turned out differently? This was one of the thoughts that occupied me after my mother died. Later I came to understand that there was nothing I could have done. What my mother wanted was not for me to do something, but for the man she loved not to leave her. And then Nell came along. When she first came to the house, she spoke to my father about my mother's death. He wasn't angry, he just said there was nothing to talk about. Nothing happened. So she came to me. It was in the middle of summer, and I found her leaning against my car. I'd seen her around before then. She was beautiful. Hard not to notice. She told me what my father had said, that nothing happened. I told her that he just meant that we don't talk about it. Well, of course. But I'm working on this book, you see. She put her hand on my arm. Please, Mr. Townsend. Sean, I've wanted to talk to you about this for such a long time. She was smiling at me, and it was impossible for me to refuse her. I knew then that I was in trouble, that she was trouble, the sort of trouble I'd been waiting for my whole life. I said I'd meet her at the Mill House. I asked her to keep this meeting private because it would upset my father, upset my wife. She smiled again, and we both knew then where it was going. The first time I went to talk to her, we didn't talk at all, so I had to go back. She teased the story out of me, strand by strand. She coaxed things out of me I didn't want to tell her. I knew that I should stop, but I couldn't. We stopped meeting at the Mill House because Lena was frequently home. We went to the cottage instead. I've no idea why my father was there that afternoon, but he waited in the trees until Nell left, and then he beat me. He punched me to the ground and kicked me. I didn't fight back because I knew he'd stop when he knew that I couldn't take any more. Afterwards, he took the keys and drove me home.
Lena. Mark scraped the nail against my neck and I closed my eyes. You have no idea what I've suffered, he said. Then he grabbed my hair and slammed my head onto the table. I started to cry. Mark released me and stood up. Stop it. Stop it, Lena. Don't cry. It was weird because then he was crying too. I stopped. We were looking at each other. I didn't do it, he said eventually. What you think I did? To your mother. You did. You have her bracelet. Where did you get it? He tossed the nail aside. I'll tell you. Only you have to do something for me. He sighed. I won't hurt you, Lena, unless you make me, okay? I said nothing. Look, I need you to go back to Beckford and tell the police that you lied, that you made all this up. I squinted at him. Seriously? Why would I do that? It's too late anyway. Josh spoke to them. Tell them Josh lied then. And if you do that... He slid his hand into his pocket and pulled out the bracelet. I'll tell you what you need to know. I stared at the bracelet. I didn't know what to do. I thought about all the stupid mistakes I'd made so far, and I didn't want to make another one. So I played scared. I played grateful. Do you promise? Will you let me go back to Beckford? He sat down and placed the bracelet on the table. I found it. I laughed. You found it? Give me a break. I went to Helen Townsend's office. I was looking for... He looked embarrassed. Something of hers. Katie's. I wanted... It was in Helen's desk drawer. You found it in Mrs. Townsend's desk. I know it makes no sense, he said. Only it did. Or it could. Mark was staring at me. There's something I'm not getting, isn't there? What did your mother do? To Helen? I said nothing. I picked up the bracelet. But I've helped you, haven't I? Now it's your turn. He was breathing short and fast, and I knew he was afraid. I've helped you. I stared at him. Katie drowned herself because she was afraid of what might happen to you. He didn't move. She did it for you. And what have you done for her? His shoulders were shaking. You've denied her completely, like she meant nothing to you. Don't you think she deserved better? He was blubbering. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Forgive me. God, forgive me. Bit late for that, don't you think?
Sean, I was on my way to Craster. Uniforms had already arrived at the house. Henderson's car was there, but the house was empty. No one had seen Lena for almost 24 hours. I needed to make her safe. After all, I'd failed her mother so badly. I'd stopped seeing Nell after the incident with my father. I wasn't alone in her company until after Katie Whittaker's death. I interviewed her as a witness, which of course was unprofessional, but a good deal of my conduct over the past year could fall under that description. It felt like grief seeing her again, because the Nell from before, the one who'd bewitched me, was no longer there. Guilt spilled out of her during our interview. She insisted that the Drowning Pool project had nothing to do with Katie's death, and yet her sentences all prefaced with, "I should have," or "I didn't realise." Knowing what I know now, I can only imagine that her guilt was about Henderson, that she must have known something. That evening I went to the cottage. It was late when she arrived, not entirely sober, tearful, on the edge. Afterwards we went to the river. Nell was hyper, manic almost. She talked about the truth, how she was tired of telling stories. "We'll never know what was going through Katie's mind," I said. She shook her head. "It's not just that, it's..." Her hand gripped mine. "Nikki Sage has been telling..." I laughed. "You're talking to Nikki? She's crazy." "You'd be surprised, Sean, how much of what she says rings true. Nell, she just tells you what you want to hear. Why would she think I wanted to hear that your mother was murdered?" she whispered.
"Lena, Mum didn't choose to go. She didn't choose to leave me. And I was going to do whatever it took to make sure Helen Townsend paid. I was running along the coastal path, Mum's bracelet in my hand. I knew there was no one behind me. Of course there was no one behind me. No one was coming. I'd no room for guilt. I had to focus. Who could I turn to? Who was going to help me?"
"Sean." My phone buzzed. "Sean?" It was Erin. "Where are you?" "Just outside Craster." "Look, I need to talk to you the second you're back in Beckford." She caught the call. Craster was quiet. I passed the very smokehouse where my mother had promised to take me and tried to picture her face as I did sometimes, but I never succeeded. I drove to the house. As I got out of the car, one of the PCs shouted, "Sir, we've got a call. A shopkeeper in the next village says he's got a girl there. She's asking him to call the police."
"Jules." My phone rang and I saw Sean's name. For a second, I didn't dare pick it up. What would I do if something had happened to Lena? My hand trembling, I answered. And there, she was safe. Lena was safe. They were bringing her home. It seemed an age before I heard a car outside. Sean helped Lena into the house. Her face was pale and dirty, but she was safe. "Lena," I said as she came through the door, and she nodded at me. "Where is he?" I hissed at Sean. "He's gone," said Lena. "His car's still there," said Sean. "He can't have gone far." "Where do you think he's gone, Lena?" I asked, but she turned away. Sean shook his head. "She doesn't want to talk. I think she's just exhausted." Sean and Erin left us. "I'm starving," Lena said. "I'll have a shower and then could you make me spaghetti bolognese again?" The tone of her voice, the softness in it, was new. "Of course I can." She wrapped her arms around me then and sobbed like a child. I tried to take her hand, but it was curled tightly into a fist. "It's going to be all right," I told her. She looked at me, then held out her hand, her fingers unfurling to reveal the treasure inside. Nell's bracelet. She didn't jump. Mum didn't leave me. She didn't jump. After we had eaten, we stayed sitting at the table. She told me about the bracelet. "He told me he took it from Mrs. Townsend's office." "Helen Townsend," Lena nodded. "But why would she have the bracelet? I don't understand." "Neither do I," she said quietly. "Not really." She sat with her head bowed, visibly sagging in front of me. "You're exhausted," I said. "You should go to bed." "Will you come with me? I don't want to be by myself." "I followed her up the stairs into your room, not her own. She clambered onto your bed, patting the space beside her. We lay there, side by side." "You know what I don't understand," she whispered, "is why you hated Mum so much. She didn't understand either." And so I told her. All the things I should have told you, I told your daughter instead. "But why didn't you just tell her what really happened? He raped you," Lena cried. "He should have gone to prison." "I was very young. I thought I'd done something wrong." "But why didn't you tell her about it later on?" "Because I thought she knew what had happened that night.
You thought she knew and did nothing. How could I explain that? Wasn't there some part of you that liked it? Lena's voice grew cold. Why do people always choose to blame the woman? It's like when someone has an affair, why does the wife always hate the other woman? Why doesn't she hate her husband? Why isn't he the one who gets shoved off a bloody cliff?
Erin. By the time Sean and I left the Mill House yesterday, I'd worked myself up into a state and I just came out with it. What exactly was going on with you and Nell Abbott? What did you say? He pulled the car over to a lay-by. It was suggested to me, I said. Hinted at. Hinted? Someone hinted something, did they? He leaned across and opened the passenger door. Get out of the car. I barely had time to close the door before he accelerated away. I started to walk along the river. I needed to think. Sean had acted like a guilty man, or an offended man. I could ignore Louise's implications, but if I did that, I'd be ignoring the fact that where there is sex, there is motive. He had a motive to get rid of Nell, and his wife did too. As I approached the bend, I saw Nikki Sage standing in the water. Are you all right, Mrs. Sage? She nodded and stepped onto the bank. Have you been to see Townsend yet? Have you asked him about his wife? You mean Helen? She looked at me, her expression contemptuous. Sean's wife? What's she got to do with anything? No, the one you're interested in is Patrick's wife, Lauren. Lauren who died 30 years ago. Yes, she's the one who started all of this. You think the dead don't matter? I was losing interest. I need to go. It was good talking to you. I decided to get to Sean's place early the next morning. I could drive him to the office, and then we'd have time to talk with no one around. It was 8:30 by the time I got there. His car wasn't in the courtyard, but I knocked on the door, just in case. But there was no reply. As I headed back to my car, I passed Patrick Townsend's place. The door was half open. That seemed as good as an invitation. Hello? I called out. Mr. Townsend? There was no answer. I walked into the living room, a Spartan place with bare walls. The only concession to decoration was a selection of photographs on the mantelpiece. Patrick Townsend in uniform, Sean as a child, and numerous pictures of Helen. There were no pictures of Sean's mother. My phone bleeped. I had a voicemail. It was Jules. I need to talk to you. Alone. It's urgent. I'll see you at the station. As I slipped the phone back into my pocket, I heard a creak of floorboards. I turned. I froze. Helen was standing by the door. She had a knife in her hand and was gripping it so tightly that blood was dripping onto the floor.
Helen. Helen had no idea why Erin Morgan was wandering about Patrick's house as though she owned it. I was chopping onions, she said. You startled me. This wasn't exactly true, because she'd stopped chopping onions when she'd seen the car pull up. She'd stood stock still while Erin knocked and then had watched her wander over to Patrick's place. She could feel the detective watching her now. She wanted Sean to be there, and Patrick. She had an urge to lay everything on the table. Mistakes had been made, admittedly, but the Townsends were a good family. They were good people. Surely she had nothing to fear.
Jules, I left Lena tucked up in her mother's bed in the morning, still sound asleep. I wrote her a note, saying that I'd meet her at the police station at 11 to make a statement. I drove to the station, stopping halfway to ring Erin. I needed to talk to her alone. Why isn't he the one who gets shoved off the cliff? Lena had been talking about Sean Townsend last night. It had all come out. How Sean had fallen in love with Nell. Helen must have found out. She must have taken revenge. Erin didn't answer her phone, so I left a message. The officer on the desk at the station told me that D.I. Townsend was in Newcastle for the day, and he didn't know the whereabouts of D.S. Morgan. I went back to my car. I took your bracelet out of my pocket. I put it in a plastic bag. The chances of there being a fingerprint or some DNA were slim, but slim was a shot at an answer. Nikki said you were dead because you found out something about Patrick Townsend. Lena said you were dead because of your affair with Sean, and Helen Townsend would not stand for that. No matter which way I turned, I saw Townsend.
Erin. Helen was staring out of the window. He's been gone ages. Who has? I asked. Patrick. He goes to the cottage. That's where Sean used to take her. That's where... She turned to look at me. Why are you here? I came to talk to Sean. What about? About an allegation of improper conduct. And then I heard footsteps and Patrick entered the room. For a moment, none of us said anything. He stared at me. Then he turned to Helen. He noticed her bloody hand. What happened? Did she do this to you? It's nothing. It wasn't her. She wants to talk to Sean about professional conduct. Patrick sat down at the table. Do you know, he said to Helen, why they moved her up here? A former colleague told me that this fine detective was removed from her post in the Met because she seduced a younger officer. And not just any officer, a woman. Can you imagine that? And then she comes here and wants to talk about my son's professional conduct. He turned to me. If Sean got caught sleeping with one of his juniors, he'd be out on his ear. How about if Sean was sleeping with a woman who ended up dead? I asked. He jumped up and put his hand around my throat. Watch your mouth, you dirty bitch. I gave him a hard shove in the chest and he let go. Dad, Helen said, you're scaring her. He turned and smiled at her. I know, love. I mean to.
Jules, I left the car outside the Townsend's place. The bracelet in my pocket. I strode into the courtyard. I had come on behalf of my sister to make things right for her. I was determined. I was unafraid. I was unafraid until Patrick Townsend opened the door. What do you want? He demanded. I stepped back. He did for his wife, Nicky had told me, and for your sister too. I was... Jules? A voice called out. Is that you? It was quite a scene. Helen was there with blood on her hand, and Erin too, pretending that she was in control of the situation. What brings you here? We're supposed to be meeting at the station. Yes, but... I turned to Helen. The reason I came was to speak to you, Mrs. Townsend. My hand trembling. I fished the plastic bag out of my pocket. I wanted to ask you when you took this bracelet from my sister's wrist. Helen's eyes widened. Where did you get it from, Jules? Erin asked. From Lena, who got it from Mark Henderson. Who took it from Helen, who, I'm guessing, took it from my sister before she killed her. Patrick laughed. What utter garbage! It was in your office, wasn't it, Helen? I said. Helen looked stricken. No, she sighed. I found it. I didn't know it was hers. Of course she didn't know, Patrick shouted suddenly. He placed his hand on her shoulder. Helen had the bracelet because I left it in her car. Careless of me, but I've become rather forgetful lately. Helen said nothing. Okay, Erin said. And where did you get it? Where do you think I got it, you moron? I ripped it off that whore's wrist before I threw her over.
Patrick, that's not what happened, Helen cried. No one spoke. The sister sobbed silently. The detective watched him, watched Helen. Come on, then. He suddenly felt irritable. You're a police officer. Do what you have to do. Erin took a deep breath and stepped towards him. Patrick Townsend, I'm arresting you on suspicion of the murder of Daniel Abbott. You do not have... Yes, all right, he said wearily. I know all that. Helen started to cry. He kissed her forehead and then followed the detective out of the door. Sitting in the interview room at Beckford Station, he felt a surprising sensation of relief. He wanted to tell his story while his mind was still his own. He expressed his intention to make a full confession to the murders of Lawrence Slater in 1983 and Daniel Abbott in 2015. Lauren was a straightforward tale. They'd argued at the house, she had attacked him, and he had defended himself. In the course of that defence, she had been wounded too grievously to save. So, in an effort to spare his son the truth and, he admitted, to spare himself a prison sentence, he drove to the river, carried her body up the cliff, and threw her, lifeless now, into the water. Was your son with you at the time? D.S. Morgan asked. He didn't see anything. He was confused, and so I told him a story, one which would make his life livable. Don't you see that? I've protected him, Patrick said, pride swelling in his chest, all his life. The story of Nell Abbott was less easy to recount. He discovered that Nell had been speaking to Nicky Sage about Lauren. He was worried she might say something to Sean, so he arranged to meet with her. And she met you at the cliff? D.S. Morgan was incredulous. Patrick smiled. You have no idea of her self-importance. I told her I would tell her the story as it had never been told before, right there, on the spot, where it happened. Then, once I had her up there, it was easy. And the bracelet? I was angry that she'd been carrying on with my son, threatening his marriage. I ripped the bracelet from her wrist. I pushed her.
September. Lena, we're leaving tomorrow. The house will be rented out. But I will live here again. I know I will. I'll come back when it doesn't hurt so much and I don't see Mum everywhere I look. I'm scared about going to London with Jules. Jules, not Julia, is really odd. But I'm a bit weird too, so maybe we'll be fine. She cooks and fusses around me. She tells me off for smoking. She makes me tell her where I'm going and when I'll be back. Like other people's mums do.
Louise, Lena had come to say goodbye and brought with her Nell's manuscripts. Do what you want with them, she said. I never want to see them again. The girl had asked if Louise could ever forgive her, and Louise said that she already had, which was a lie, but spoken out of kindness. For while she knew that she could never forgive Lena, she couldn't hate her either. Because if anything was clear, if anything in this horror was without doubt, it was Lena's love for Katie.
December. Nicky. Beckford was quiet. Winter was coming and lots of people had moved on. Patrick Townsend was rotting in his cell. And his son had run away to find some peace. Good luck to him with that. The mill house was empty. Lena Abbott and her aunt off to London. And the Whittakers had left. Things were quieter in her head, too. Jeanie wasn't talking as loudly as she used to. And when she did, it was more of a friendly chat.
Erin, I went back to Beckford just before Christmas. I wanted to speak to Sean, but I couldn't find him. The address I was given for him turned out to be an empty house. I even contacted HMP Frankland, but they said that Patrick hadn't had a single visitor since his arrival. I wanted to ask Sean for the truth, if he'd known about his father all along. After Sean left the police, there was an inquiry. Questions asked and left unanswered. And not just about Nell's case, but Mark Henderson's too. How it was that he was able to disappear without trace from under our noses. As for me, I went over and over that last interview with Patrick. The story he'd told. Nell's bracelet torn from her wrist. But the clasp on the bracelet was unbroken. I did point this out at the time, but after Patrick's confession and Sean's resignation and all the general arse-covering and back-passing, no one was really in the mood to listen. As I sat by the river, I felt that Nell's story, and Lauren's, and Katie's too, were incomplete, unfinished. I never really saw all there was to see.
Helen. She'd found herself a job for which she was overqualified, and a small ground-floor flat. When they first got to the town, they rented a house. But then she woke up one morning and Sean was gone, so she moved out. She hadn't tried to call him. She knew he wasn't coming back. Their family was broken. It had always been Patrick who held them together.
January. Jules. It's an odd thing to sit across the breakfast table every morning from a 15-year-old you. It has the same dreamlike expression when she's lost in thought. She doesn't listen. She's willful and annoying. She kisses me on the cheek every morning before she goes to school. I cannot make up to you the things I did wrong. My eagerness to think the worst of you. My failure to help you. My failure even to try to love you. Because there is nothing I can do for you. My atonement will have to be an act of motherhood. I could not be a sister to you. But I will try to be a mother to your child.
Patrick. Patrick no longer dreamed of his wife. And when he woke, it was always Helen's face he saw. Her stricken expression when he told them what he'd done. He was grateful he did not have to witness Sean's reaction. By the time his son returned to Beckford that evening, Patrick's confession had been made in full. Sean came to visit him once on remand. He doubted he would come again, which broke his heart, because everything he'd done, the stories he had told, and the life he had constructed, it was all for Sean.
Sean, I am not what I think I am. I am not who I thought I was. I was the child of a suicided mother and a good man. There were doubts, of course. My father told me that after my mother died, I didn't speak for 3 days. But I had a memory of speaking to kind, sweet Jeannie Sage. Didn't I tell her how we'd gone to the river in the car together, together? I thought I remembered all three of us being in the car, but my father told me it was a nightmare. In the nightmare, I woke, and my father was shouting. My mother too, they were saying ugly things to one another. Her, failure, brute. Him, slut, whore. I heard a sharp sound, a slap, and then silence. I crept down the stairs. I heard a dog whimpering, but we don't have a dog. And then in the nightmare, we were all three of us in the car, me in the back, my mother in the passenger seat slumped against the door. And then her head fell to one side and I could see her. I could see blood on her face. Her tongue lolled from her mouth. In the nightmare, she reached for me and touched my hand, and I was terrified. I pulled away. There was always a fault line there in me, between my understanding of what I knew had happened and the strange, slippery sense of wrongness. But the quake didn't come until I met Nell. At the beginning, she accepted the story I told her, but after Katie died, Nell changed. She started talking to Nikki Sage. She told me she believed my father had killed my mother, and the fault line widened. Odd visions returned to me. If I believed Nell's story, I was no longer the son of a suicided mother and a decent man. I was the son of a monster. And worse than that, I was the boy who watched his mother die and said nothing. The night Nell died, we were walking back from the cottage. She wanted so much for me to get to the truth. She was dizzy with drink and sex and renewed purpose. You need to remember it, she told me. You need to stand there and remember it, Sean, the way it happened. We stood at the top of the cliff looking down. I didn't see it from here, Nell, I said. I was in the trees below. She was on the edge of the cliff, her back to me. Did she cry out? She asked. I closed my eyes, and I saw my mother in the car, reaching out for me. I shrank back, but she kept coming at me, and I tried to push her away. With my hands in the small of Nell's back, I pushed her away. Into the